storm came up over him.
First under he went off to get off the lake.
He's not making
it. She's on the lake.
She's on the lake paddle.
How do you do
she's not very far out.
And she's back in Mexico.
She's bound more than me.
First class.
And she's struggling. So she threw her
calls her transport.
And she pulled back down. I'm yelling at her.
Everybody else is getting hot water.
If her rate was going to sign, and now she's really panicked.
Well, usually the places he goes to, they don't.
Pretty good.
Off Mexico.
The border.
Your waist right
there.
You're walking.
He's probably on a cruise and just can't get any bandwidth.
You
don't want to pay the bandwidth fee on the boat.
Yeah, that was really next to him.
That's what makes everyone boat.
Food. Or internet service.
Yeah, take my thing out of the package.
Yeah.
Isn't the point of being on a boat having internet
service like that?
My daughter and son-in-law, they went on a cruise earlier this year. And
we had their kids in the
swimming pool in our area.
They had a very, very limited window of time that they could communicate with us. Like when they were, when they came into port, basically is when they can go to like on the port Wi-Fi system that have a ship.
Yeah,
to do it.
Oh, I mean, if there was an emergency, we could have called probably
Yeah.
I can look over
to crazy.
Meredith just been text me. Sorry, but I'm running a few minutes late.
Okay, that's official. She can join the progress.
Are we good to start?
Yes, I've already started the recording.
Welcome.
Okay, we'd like to welcome everyone to the Northview Fire District regular board meeting. Today is Thursday, April 23rd, 2026. And it is just shortly after 5 p.m. So we are going to get started. Meredith is going to be late. And is anybody else?
Leonard's not.
Leonard's excused.
And Leonard is excused. So we will go ahead and begin with agenda item number one, opening prayer, reading, or expression of thought.
All right.
And the Pledge of Allegiance by Jay.
The pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I got a prayer to do a thought. Our Father in Heaven, we're grateful to be able to gather this afternoon as a fire board and administration and the public to be able to discuss the business of the fire district and be able to face challenges that they face every day. And we're grateful for the service which our men and women who serve the community here provide, and bless them with thy hand of protection, all they do, and bless their families to be able to be comforted at home and while they're on duty. And again, we're grateful for the beautiful place in which we live and this beautiful corner of the world. And we say things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. And then I've always liked this quote, saying the Man in the Arena by Teddy Roosevelt. I mean, I think everybody's familiar with it, but it's a fun one to dust off from time to time. And when I say the man, it means the woman too. There, Meredith,
thank
she's
you.
There. You know, so when I say man, it's, I'm not singling out
The human
in the arena. All right, it's not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who's actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds. Who knows the great enthusiasms, the great devotions, and who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least he fails well, daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat. Theodore Roosevelt, April 23rd, 1910. There you go.
Well,
those of us who served in the arena. Okay.
Thank you.
Oh.
Very good. Thank you. We're inspired.
Yeah. Teddy Roosevelt.
Awesome. Yeah, the Rough Riders.
All that fun stuff.
All right. Welcome, Meredith. How
hey,
are you?
Apologize for being late.
No worries.
Junior high
track. We just barely started.
This thing can be brutal, but hilariously fun.
Okay. Item number two is consideration to approve the minutes of March 26, 2026.
I'd like to make a suggestion to a correction to those.
Okay.
On my comments where it talked about me being upset at the property tax, I would like it to more clearly state what my objection is. Trustee Arrington stated he is upset over the way the legislature handled the performing entity with a notice requirement for property tax increase last year.
He gave me the wording he'd like, and I've already defended the minutes.
I just wanted to clarify that my problem was not with the fire district, was with the information that we had. With that change, I suggest we approve the minutes as suggested.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to adopt the minutes as amended. Is there any further discussion or any further amendments? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And I'll abstain because I was not here. Item number three, consideration to approve the monthly financial transactions for March 2026.
Okay. Just first of all, look at the actual transactions for March. Were there any questions? Revenue coming in, the expenditures out for the transactions in March.
I just had a couple of questions on the LifeScan Wellness Program, the $43,000.
Okay.
Is that for all employees?
That was the whole shebang, if I understand it right.
Administration, yep. Too?
Everybody, yep. Okay. 40, total 45 people.
All right.
Just so we're clear, what page is that on?
It's on the...
It's down the bottom.
Oh, it's on page 4. And I just have a question. Do we supply cash at uniforms for new hires, or is that just...
So we front load, so there's not a financial burden on our new hires.
Yeah, I don't care. I just want to make sure. Yeah.
Yep. So we front load their uniform allowance.
Yeah.
So they have enough money to go purchase the stuff we need, and then once they're off probation, so we front load 6 months, and once they're off probation, they start their monthly payments for
I mean, I just wanted to know if we were helping them out or not. So
yep.
Those are the only questions I have.
Okay.
I have a question on fireworks. Do we do our own private fireworks show, or did we contribute to someone else? Is that fireworks for like 450 or something?
That revenue fees.
Oh,
fireworks stands.
Okay.
Pay for Ryan. Anyway.
You think we wouldn't invite you? I mean, if we had one, we would be.
Was like, where was I for the fireworks?
Well, then I did wonder if you contributed, but I misread that. Sorry, I'm doing a card. I want to see the finances.
Yeah, so that's
permitting fees.
Yeah.
Okay.
For the stands that are with
uh-huh.
The,
okay.
Yeah, if there's a 450 was for individual inside retail sales. So like Smith's, Lee's, and Walmart, all known inside. So they get a reduction. The stands are $300 a tent.
Okay, thanks for the clarification.
Okay. Other questions?
And then if you look at the year-to-date actuals to budget, just going through, you know, kind of down, we're showing about 84% on our ambulance fee revenue. So we're 3/4 of the way through, so roughly 75%. So we're ahead a little bit on the ambulance revenue. For the year, So our revenue's looking good. We're still waiting for paramedic amounts from Weber County. So we're about 3 months behind, but they will be coming. That's the 4102 paramedic license stuff. So overall, total income, we're at 89, almost 90% of the year. Of course, property taxes come in December, so we collect those quite a while ago. Expenses, salaries and wages, we're about 78% there, it says, total salaries and wages. I have done the first, recorded the first payroll in April, so it's going to be a little over than 75% anyway, so we're right on schedule there. All the benefits and so forth, again, we're right there about where we should be. Going down further to the detail line items, starting with books and subscriptions. Remember, what I'm doing is green is where within where we need to be. Red is we're past over the, we're over the 75%. A lot of those are because we pay things up front in the first of the year. Books and subscriptions is one of them. We are looking, we keep looking at equipment O&M and vehicle O&M. They're ones that we need to keep track of. We'll probably end up over vehicle O&M for the year. Gas costs and costs for other repairs. Building maintenance, we're over there. That was, again, first of the year, we had to do a door.
Couple garage doors.
Okay, garage doors. Utilities, professional technical expense. Those are pretty much done for the year. They are over 75% at this point in time, but we should be okay for whole year. Department supplies, we're over there a little bit. Same with medical supplies. That's another one that prices have really gone up. So we'll be over there at the end of the year. But the nice thing is if you look at total expenses, we're at right at 75%. So that's a tracking about right where we should be. And in fact, you know, when a bill gets put in, it is included in the actual. So Nikki's put in most of the bills for this month. So we're still, that 78% is part of April right now included in there anyway. So overall, we're doing okay that way. I added something that we had a discussion with the budget committee as we met. And so it was suggested that I added what our bank balance is at each end of the month. So that's what you see at the bottom there. Bank balance right now, $5,000,009. Okay, that's as of, well, 3/31. What we get our big influx of cash in December from property taxes. So we've got still 8 months to go to pay all of our payrolls and so forth. And so we need about $4,000,004 to get us through the next 8 months till we get the cash. So right here, we're looking at, you know, just what's going to be the lowest point where we end up with a cash balance. And that's usually just beginning of November. And so, you know, we'll need about $4,000,004, but I want to just kind of put this in context. So our current fiscal year 2026 budget overall is $6,610,000. That's the balanced budget that you see in the budget column in this report for the totals. That's where I said less expenditures. Typically, I calculated what that would probably be over the next 8 months. So a little over 440,000. And so our estimated minimum balance at November 30th probably be around 2 million 2.
You mean a little more than 400 or 4 million?
Oh, did I say 4,400,000? Okay. What will it spend over the next 8 months? That'll probably bring us down to roughly 2 million 2 will be our balance. And so we kind of thought we'd set a minimum cash on hand. We're doing some processes where we're looking at minimum amounts, particularly for fund balance, which we had this discussion. Fund balance really doesn't mean a whole lot in a sense. When we talk about fund balance, particularly in TNTs and stuff, you know, they think, oh, that's how much cash you have. It's not it at all. It's like, okay, what's the equity in your house? Well, that's the fund balance. Well, the equity in your house has nothing to do with how much cash you have in the bank. And we have to live on cash. We pay our employees and pay all of those things on cash. So, you know, it's somewhat irrelevant in the sense that when we look at minimum balances, it's more important to look at cash balances. And so that's why I kind of put this in so that we can then keep track of it. I also did put our FY25 fund balances, because that's from the audit. And so you can see there, our total fund balance is $5,055,000. But again, that's basically saying, okay, what's the equity in your house? Well, that's the equity in our whole department overall. But then I wanted to put that in context with the Utah Code. The Utah Code says you can have a maximum fund balance, and that's the general fund, of what your, it includes what's called your committed, assigned, and unassigned fund balance. So right now we're at 5055. So that would have been our fund balance end of FY25, which is beginning of fiscal year 26. And then the code says, and your fund balance can be that plus 100% of your current year property tax levy. So given our fund balance, beginning of this fiscal year, our current property tax levy was $4,222,000. We actually could end up, maximum allowed fund balance by law is right for us at this point in time is about $9.9 million. Okay. But I wanted to give that idea of what our fund balances are. But I think more important, the idea is the cash balance.
And the cash balance is 5.9?
Right now, 5.9. Okay. That includes our operating cash, and most of it's in the PTIF. The PTIF is getting 3.86. It's actually gone down about 1% over the past 3-4 months.
Can you tell them what you anticipate that getting down to before we receive our November property
tax? Yeah, then that's where 2 million 2 is what we'd probably close to what that would be. We do get, you know, revenue from First Professional each month. We get revenue and cash in, if you will. And so that's, you know, that comes in a little bit of time, but certainly, you know, the main part, and we get a little bit of property taxes as well monthly, but, you know, 90% of that comes in December. So we kind of live from cash wise December to December. And so we'll get a big influx 10th of December. You know, have a lot of cash, but we've got to live on that for the most part for a whole year as far as cash, what we have to pay out, payroll, and so forth. So I keep track of that and look at that. Keep mostly in PTIF. but transfer amounts into our operating where certain our actual cash gets expended as well. So I hope that gives you some context. We kind of discussed that with the budget and thought that we'd put in, you know, just what our bank balance is each time, each month. But again, I think that needs context too, because, absolutely, you know, I can have a lot of money, but then cash there. But if I have to live on it for 8 months, which at this point I need to, kind of important.
Yeah. What do you think is our lowest cash month?
November, just before we get our December 10th
distribution
from property tax from Weber County. So I think that gives you some context in relation to cash balance. To me, cash balance is much more important than what your fund balance is. But, you know, that there's Utah code doesn't state what your cash balance should be or whatever, and thank goodness. But they do want to see equity, but that, you know, your fund balance. But fund balance is not cash.
Yeah. Very good. Any other questions? Okay. Does somebody want to make a motion?
Sure. I'll make a motion to approve the monthly financial transaction for March of 2026. I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I have a request. Would it be possible that before this is uploaded to Boardable, it be converted to printed as a PDF and uploaded so we can see the whole thing?
Yeah.
Margin width.
Yeah,
all the way down. It's just so hard to read.
So I used to put it right to a PDF, but then once I put it to a PDF, it's hard. Well, I can't put in these little notes, you know, the colors and all of that. So I went to Excel. The easiest way probably is if for you to just download the actual Excel. I don't know what Boardable does to it.
What?
You can download it.
So if you actually downloaded this document in Excel, you could see it and just scroll around whatever you wanted to do.
But I mean, the colors, you can, those show up with you print it when you print.
It's two sheets of paper if you print it, because I do it.
We'll
figure it out.
I don't know what Boardable does to it. So
yeah, well, it just there's six pages, or is it six?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, six pages. Yeah. The first three are the first whatever 20, 50 columns, whatever, and then last three are so you just have to go up and down. It's just a hassle.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Easier to read. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Item number four, public comments. Nothing?
Oh, you need to vote.
Oh.
You just voted.
Sorry.
No vote.
I thought we
voted. I did too.
We vote. Oh, anyway, all in favor say aye. And this is a motion to approve the financials.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay. Item number four, public comments.
No.
Not. Okay, going once, going twice. Is there anybody online?
Victor.
Andre is with the manager.
Okay.
Chris Maxfield guy.
What's that?
Always.
Okay. Item number five is presentation on an RDA with Rise Bakery. And with him. Are you Rob?
Yeah, I am. Yep.
Hi, Rob. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
This is Rob Sant. Are you with?
So I'm their consultant. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm with Urban and Main Consulting. I'm an economic development consultant, and we are helping Pleasant View create this potential CRA. So if you want to go to the next page, and then, yeah, the city manager, Andrea, is on the online. She'd love to be here, but she's down in St. George at a conference, so she's joining it virtually. Yeah, so we're excited to be here today. So this is kind of a unique CRA. You don't see a lot of CRAs that are just one parcel, but that's what this one is. So the Rise Bakery, just right there on 2700, they're looking to do an expansion to the existing facility that they have there. And it will be 116,000 square foot expansion. And what they're looking at is looking at two different types of expansions. So no matter what, they're going to expand. And so you might see that there's some construction already underway there. Mm-hmm. So the expansion's happening, but they're looking. So Rise Bakery has a national footprint. So they have different facilities throughout the country. And as they analyze what type of expansion they're going to do, sometimes it could be for a new product line. Sometimes it could just be a storage and a warehouse. And so what they are asking help in is they want to do a product line expansion. And if you do that product line expansion, it'll create 170 new EdTIF. So that's what the state gives for higher paying jobs. It'll be 170 new EdTIF qualified manufacturing jobs, and then $61 million of capital investment. The other option would be the storage. And if they do the storage, you're looking at probably 10 jobs and about $10 million of capital investment. So a big difference between the two. But the big difference between is there's a lot of personal property involved with the product line expansion, which increases the property taxes for all the taxing entities. And so they're asking for a little bit of public participation for that. So, yeah, it's just under 22 acres, their existing parcel. The current value is $17.8 million. And the property tax generation is $190,000.
That's what's generated.
Currently. That's what's currently being generated. And so with these, that will be frozen. And so all the tax entities will continue to receive what you received in tax year 2025. So you go to the next slide. So this is kind of goes a little more detailed. So at the peak of the investment, you're looking at $33 million of new assessed value. But $20 million of it is that personal property, and that does depreciate year over year. So by the time we did a conservative budget as we created this budget, and so we showed that they would do one initial investment of personal property, and then we didn't add an additional investment during the 15-year period. They likely will do another investment, which would just increase that number, but we're having a cap at how much money they could get. So it won't increase the money that the fire district would be giving. So yeah, the incremental value at 15 years is $15.2 million. So the total assessed value would be $33.1 million. What we're asking for is a 15-year participation and then a 50-50 split on the new tax increment. Go to the next slide. That just shows what I just said there. So just for that one too, so you're aware, the county and the school district, they've approved the participation agreements. And so now that a lot of the, at 15 years and 50%.
Yeah.
And kind of what a lot of the special service districts, they like to wait to see how they vote, those vote before they vote. So we've gone through and they've approved those. On the next slide, this just shows what that base year tax is. So you're currently receiving just under $23,000 a year. You'll continue to receive that during the 15-year period, which is about over $340,000. Then on the next slide, this shows that 50-50 pass-through. So this is new property tax that's not currently being generated on the site. And so your just over $14,000 is the half of the 50%. And then the next slide is just the other half. So it's the same numbers that would go to Pleasant View CRA to spend on the project. And then this next one, we do a just kind of little graph that shows that. So the yellow line is the base year. That's the money that will stay with all the taxing entities. And then the green line is the new tax increment that you'll retain. The gray line is the tax increment that will be shared with Pleasant View. And then after year 15, that incremental growth, 100% of it will go to the taxing entities. And based off of what that personal property investment looks like, it's anywhere from 86% to 183% growth in annual tax revenue for all the taxing entities. Next one. These are some of their but-for costs that they mentioned. So they're really trying to build more of an energy efficient and a water efficient project. And so they've identified kind of $9.9 million of extraordinary costs. And then something that Pleasant View asked them on the next page is, you know, hey, you've already kind of talked to our planning commission. Do you really need this public dollar? And so they provided a letter. It's hard to read on here, but what it kind of just says is what I mentioned earlier, that they're looking at all their different footprint across the nation to see where they decide to expand. So this just says that it is needed.
What does the total incentive end up being to?
So it's about 1.9. If you go back up to the 50.
Yeah, that's
one more. No, higher than that. Yeah. One more after the graph. One more before the graph, sorry. So 1.7 million. Is what the total is that they'll be getting. And then for the fire district, it's just over $200,000. And then that letter was the last slide. So any questions? Mm-hmm. And it'll something that will be triggered right away. So it won't be something that you'll wait 4 or 5 years to start it. This is a project that will probably start after construction. They'll probably trigger it in 2028. And then, as I mentioned before, they'll likely invest in personal property again during that 15-year period. And so the interlocal agreements have a cap at that $1.7 million. So once that hit, the project will be expired. So it's likely that it could also probably not go the full 15 years.
But if they have put in additional capital investment, then once if it exceeds that amount, it all comes to, I mean, the additional investment that is taxed, those taxes still come to all of the taxing entities, 100%.
So once they hit that number,
right,
everything else will go to the tax entities, correct? Yeah. And then something else that we added in your agreement, just so you know, is we aren't incentivizing a warehouse. So we have a paragraph in there that if they decide to do the warehouse, the agreement's gone.
That was my.
Yep. Yeah. So that's right there. It's written in every agreement. Okay. Yeah. Pleasant View, they don't want to support that either. So. Yeah.
So at the end of 15 years, the new total of their investment will be an added income to us.
Correct.
Correct.
But,
yeah. So you go from $22,000 a year and you jump up to about. I'm doing math on the spot, about 60,000. So it's
That's at the end of the 15.
At the end of the 15 years. And during the 15 years, you get an additional 14. So you go from 22 to 36.
Total increase, how many jobs? It just seems like the traffic in that area is already berserk.
Yeah, so they're I think that part of it, they have to do with traffic. So if it's 175 jobs, and they'll be open 24 hours a day, so it won't be 175 jobs, you know, during peak times, that's spread out throughout the shifts.
Hmm. Okay. So they've already started this project and they're digging the hole.
They have definitely already started.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Yep. No, I'm the blunt one here, so I always try to hold back.
No, you're great. Yeah. So the project started.
Like property taxes are generally one of those things that, like, you're like, okay, we're going to have you pay property taxes because this is going to really increase our infrastructure issues over time, for sure. I mean, by the time you have all the trucks and the jobs and everything, which are positive, it's also going to make so that we're going to have to increase that accessibility to the freeway, helping people get through that. And then even on the fire district, it's going to possibly have more, you know, calls. It's going to have more, anyway, any population increase, you're like, hey, we're increasing property taxes for a reason, because there's now new costs associated to cities and districts. So giving away property taxes does feel hesitant to me.
Yeah.
How much did you pay in? How much did they pay in impact fees?
$130,000-ish.
So that's that alone is more, well, is half the tax that we could expect to receive over 15 years.
So we received in impact fees on
correct, which is intended to do exactly what
offset your, those impacts.
What yeah. your comes to know about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure. So, not the infrastructure, but actually our impact from having called. Like the infrastructure impact fees to go. Would right. they pay it to every entity or just?
Oh like no, the impact fees. I mean, they probably yeah,
there's have, a fire impact fee, and then Pleasant View has sewer impact. Like, yeah. So they would have to pay those impact fees for that as well.
But our fee is for our service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So any infrastructure increases for our service, their pro rata share or their proportionate share. Sure, I don't know. It's not proportionate is. Accounted for in
theory by impact
what they pay.
Okay.
So
and yeah, and again, this is the taxes that don't exist yet, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the big difference here is there's that $20 million of personal property tax,
mm-hmm.
and in the event which they said in that letter that this becomes a warehouse, that number becomes two. So that's an $18 million difference in what you would get property tax on.
Other questions?
So we're not giving up anything initially. I mean, any improvement they get, we get something out of that.
Yep.
But the big thing is they get keep some for development that we get. But there is some increment that we'll get every correct. Year.
Yep. So you get what you got this last year.
Yeah.
And then the new increment, it's a 50-50 split.
Yeah. Okay.
And then after 15 years, you get 100% of it.
Or after they reach the cap.
Or after they reach the cap, whichever mm-hmm. comes first.
There's just rumors that they're already going to do it no matter what.
So they're building no matter what. But what's inside the building is what they've...
It's either a warehouse, an empty warehouse,
right.
or a product.
Right. No, I totally comprehended yeah. that. My, yes. What I've heard is that yeah. they're almost using that as like a, don't help us out, we're doing the warehouse. Help
yeah.
us out, we're doing... like. But they're still planning to actually do not yeah. a warehouse. So yeah. I don't know. It's obviously just rumors, but
yeah.
I just wonder.
That's true. Production facility is more valuable than a warehouse.
It correct. Is. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And I can't speak to that.
Yeah, I was going to say, you probably can't.
I just, that. Yeah, for us, it's, we said, because Pleasant View asked the same question.
Yeah.
And so then we just said, hey, this is, you know, it's the elephant in the room. It's important.
Yeah.
And then they just said, here's our letter. So.
So they're just waiting for the special districts to jump on board.
Correct. Yeah. So we're presenting to you. And then Monday, it's Bona Vista Water. And then Weber Basin and Central, the sewer district, they have their own internal policies where you present to like a tax increment committee that they have. And that committee makes a recommendation to the board. So we've started that process. And, but then the fire district, the city, the school district, the county, it's, it accounts for like 92% of the property tax.
Yeah.
So my guess is with that secured.
That's my point. I just don't think what we decide matters.
Yeah.
Like, I think that they're already made their decision.
I mean,
and you, like you said, how much yeah. did you say? What was the percentage on the school board and the city?
It's, well, it's the city. You're bigger than the city
mm-hmm.
with this one. So you're the third biggest tax.
Okay, yeah. The school board and county.
Yeah,
for the two you mentioned.
Yeah,
so they've already approved it, or they the school district has.
Yeah,
the
both of them. Yeah,
the
county.
They've already gotten those players in the game. I just don't think they are going to need it, but I don't love RDA.
Yeah, and they're and I'm right, I can't speak to this, but sometimes this county and school district can go back and say, "Hey, we're not going to."
Oh, did they do it contingent so, upon the special district?
I'm not sure. The school district didn't. But the county might have, yeah. We worked with the county, and they did it by themselves after we presented to them. I can tell you that your $214,000 is important to Arise.
So what, you say the county and the school district haven't bought off yet?
So they've, no, they've approved, yeah, they've approved them, yes, yeah.
Question, but 14, that's over, that's the average.
This is the annual average year.
Yeah. So that, as growth goes and as property assessments, if they go up, then there's going to be a little bit more per year that we would pay out.
So, yeah, so what it is.
But that's your just average.
Yeah, it's just what it achieves. As soon as you hit the $1.7 million, so in the event that there's more personal property, and let's say this number ends up being, you know, it's $28,000 right now, and ends up being $30,000, it would still be a 50-50 split. It's just the $1.7 million would just get hit
sooner. So what about when we hit $214?
Yeah. Yeah.
Individually.
Yeah.
Don't care.
Yeah.
Setting aside.
So I don't know if that's in your agreement. We could add it to your agreement for sure.
That'd be something to consider.
That was a good question.
Do you ever do, you have the average. Do you ever calculate that on a present value?
Yeah, I have that calculation. I can share it with you for sure.
Robert, most of the RDAs that you do, are they mostly 50-50 splits now, what's the trends going on?
So, great question. A lot of it depends on the need, but what's interesting is Weber County just adopted a policy that their maximum they're going to give is 50% for 15 years. The school district, they're going a little above theirs. Their policy is 50% 11 years, but they went above it for theirs. They love industrial projects. It doesn't result in school kids. So for them, it's a win. but you're seeing more and more kind of do the 50, but you'll still see 70%, 75%. What's really interesting is you have a lot now. So West Weber, they just created an inland port out there, and that's 25 years per parcel, 75%. And there's no maximum, right? So if you have 20 years of development, that could be a, 60, 80 year project. But yeah, so the state ones are still pretty heavy, but the ones that rely on us coming in and negotiating, 50%, I'd say, is starting to be the norm.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's something that you could do if you wanted to. I know you don't get a lot of these, but you could adopt a internal policy.
And we have had some preliminary discussions about doing that. So, we'll probably end up going in that direction.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Thanks for your answer.
You got it.
My only other question is this a yes or a no, or is there also like, hey, we're willing to give a lesser amount for lesser time? Could we make an offer basically? It's something that we were willing to do.
Yes, you could. So we're asking the sewer district for 15 and 50, but their policy is 10 and 50. And so they might tell us, hey, we're going to stick to our 10-year 50% policy.
What with the North Ogden RDA?
It's 10, right?
What was our commitment? It wasn't a split, was it?
It was a 50-50 split, I think. I can look.
I don't remember.
But that's a 20 year.
Of course, there were four or five or six North Ogden RDAs that we were part of over the years.
And some of the old ones, statute defined what your participation was.
Yeah.
But anything since 2016, it's been this process.
Okay.
And in 2016, the norm was 20, 25 years, 75%. So just with time, that slowly trickled.
Any other questions?
I guess an ad.
Okay, is there a motion?
He has a question.
April.
If you allow me. Now, this is something I noticed earlier on your slides. Weber Area Dispatch is not included.
So that's something that the county typically, they say, hey, our participation is dependent on Weber Area not participating.
Do they give a reason?
Budget, usually. I mean, it's been years since, but that's kind of just been their...
I mean, because they're their own taxing entity.
Yeah.
I didn't hear it.
Yeah.
They can opt out. There is not a motion, by the way.
There's not?
Mm-mm, it's just a presentation.
No, we wanted to give you guys the
chance
to think about it.
And if we wanted to try to negotiate prior to sending it to legal and getting a review, we wanted to make sure that you guys had a chance.
Any other questions then regarding?
No, you did a great job. Thank you so much for letting this happen.
So then it'll be next month that you take action on it, or what's the plan? We'll get it just so we could let Rise know.
I don't see any reason not to.
Okay, perfect. Thanks so much. You have a great night.
Thank you.
First slide.
I think first slide.
Did Andrea want to say anything? Andrea, are you still there?
She dropped back.
Oh, she left. Just me. She's gone. They're talking to him.
Or let's see. I think it was that one, Mom.
If we can send out the slides.
Oh yeah, if you do that, that'd be awesome. I was trying to jot them down, but I couldn't write
that. Slides are much better than reading the legal language.
Okay. Anything else on that? Okay. We'll go to item number six, discussion and or action to approve fiscal year, to approve policy manual adoption.
So we have been, this is an ongoing process for forever, with updating policies, but I think it's best practice to at least once a year bring this to you, and you guys read off policy manual. It's been a couple of years since we put all this together with Lexipol, and like we've discussed, after UASD, there was a list of different policies that we identified from there that we thought we'd probably make sure that we had. So that list has changed and grown over time, but this is the one we started with. Since then, again, we tweak policies all the time that don't require legal, anything that requires, you know, legal advice or input. Those are ones that I'd like to bring to you guys to get your nod on, but just minor tweaks in languages that are operational, we generally don't. Some of the ones I wanted to highlight today, two specifically that did require legal review and I'd like your guys to sign off on. But first is organizational structure, 208 minimum staffing, 323 traffic accidents, 1025 drug and alcohol free workplace, and then 1201 for EMAC bonus. The organizational structure, we're just updating that policy to reflect our new hires and the way that we're now have our resources deployed across three platoons. So nothing real groundbreaking on that, but wanted to make it official. Then minimum staffing, we changed minimum staffing to reflect staffing levels that we have now with the paramedic unit and the additional firefighter that we brought on board a couple of years ago, trying to get our minimum staffing up on the hill up to five per day is what we're going to call base staffing. So full staffing would be we have no employees off at all, nobody's taking PPO. That would be seven here, so that would be three on the ladder truck, two on an ambulance, two on a medic unit. That's how many bedrooms we have here. We can't put any more here if we wanted to, unless they're sleeping on cots, which has happened with paramedic students. And then six up at station 22, but that's rare. Generally speaking, we have at least one person off on PPO. What we're trying to maintain, and this of course is overtime budget allowing, is going to be this base staffing. This is what you guys said you wanted. This is why you guys paid and increased our staffing levels a few years ago. So that puts us seven here. You know, that's three on the ladder truck, two on the ambulance, two on the medic unit, and then five at station 22 to respond to the north end. So that is one captain. One driver, always one paramedic, and at least one firefighter on the hill. So we do that so we have paramedic coverage here with the medic unit to meet our county obligation. We have to do that by contract based on our agreement. But then we also didn't want to give up the benefits of what we developed prior to getting included into the county program, which was having paramedic coverage at both areas. So technically speaking, on paper, the paramedic unit here is the ALS coverage for the district. But keeping one paramedic on the ambulance at 22 every day in our base staffing model allows us to have ALS coverage within that first due time. So they can get there, and this is something that we worked with Dr. Groh to make sure it was okay, that we weren't violating the county agreement with this, but our paramedic on that ambulance can get to that emergency faster and do ALS paramedic level interventions while waiting for the paramedic unit to come from here, Station 3 or Roy or wherever else it's coming from. So we really, really like that. And to accommodate that and make it make sense, we do still have to have a paramedic on one of our ambulances anyway. So before that paramedic was here, be able to accommodate the Pleasant View ER ALS transfers. So what we did is we just switched that responsibility from ambulance 29 to ambulance 12. That's our base staffing. With five, if we have to, we can decrease that down to what we're going to call our new minimum staffing level. Still seven here, we have to have that. The station 22, we dropped to four, so that we would drop that one firefighter. We still keep that one paramedic at a minimum on that ambulance to be able to meet our obligation to PBER and keep that ALS coverage in that first due time frame on the hill. But we drop the firefighter off in June 22, so you won't have that 202. And it gets us by. It's not what we want. Good overtime budget allowing, we want to try and maintain that base staffing level. But if we have unexpected injuries or we're having trouble getting somebody back on an overtime shift, we've given ourselves the freedom to drop that down to 2.
Our paramedic on the hill does not supply our requirement to the county, right?
Nope.
It has to be one in this station.
Yeah, but we do still have to have it to meet our obligation to PDER.
Yeah.
So we have to have three paramedics per day to both meet our air facility transport requirements and to meet two paramedic requirement on the Medicaid per county each day. We think this has been a good change. And been pretty consistent, we would say, percentage of the time, Jeremiah, that we're able to maintain base staffing.
Probably 80%
of the time. All right, next update is the first one that I printed a copy for you. This is our traffic accident policy. We ran into some trouble with the standard off-the-shelf Lexapol version of this. Because it left too much ambiguity in what dollar amounts and how we classify different types of accidents when it came to both disciplinary action or process, and more importantly, when we not drug test employees after accidents. So we wanted to formalize that and give ourselves a structure to make decisions based off so that we were treating each employee equally when something happened. So minor accidents would be anything less than $2,500. Moderate accident would be anything above that to $15,000. And then a severe accident would be $15,000 and above. Got that legally reviewed by legal. She was comfortable with everything in that policy. And then, like I said, this one sort of ties into the drug and alcohol free workplace policy. This actually outlines when and how exactly we do drug testing and further. Also ran this through Kristen, which was super helpful, but this has also been reviewed by legal. We did make some changes based on Kristen's input. So the policy manual that went out in your board packet didn't have the updated version on that, so we'll have to modify the action you guys take or the motion you take to make sure that that's included. But essentially, this ties directly to those accident limits that we set in the traffic accident policy, being consistent across the board. We did discuss testing anybody for any accident, but it costs us about $400 to do a single drug and alcohol screen. And it's a pretty big operational disruption for, you know, if somebody broke a toaster or backed into something, which is then on the back bumper, didn't feel like it was financially responsible to take them out of service and go drug test them. So,
and then wait for their drug screen.
Wait for the screen. They can't drive or operate and tell anything after that. So we felt like that $2,500 amount is appropriate. Anything above that into that second tier moderate classification of accident would be appropriate for us to then go to the time and expense to get a drug test.
How easily can you make that determination?
It's
$2,500. Because you're basically having to make that decision on the spot.
Yeah, so generally we ask the captains to give an estimate, and then they work with Jeremiah. This is in his portfolio to try to estimate if it is not clear or close. I think Jeremiah generally defaults to test instead of not test. You know, it's tough with vehicles. We're not going to run it down to a body shop and get an estimate on how much the damage is. But and we unfortunately we do damage enough stuff that we do start to get an idea how much things cost. But even you know even one radio, and that was the discussion. One radio is $5,000. So someone were to, and I've seen this happen more than once in my 27 years, leave their radio on the bumper of a truck when they respond out on a call or it gets run over. Now that's an easy one for us. We know that's about $2,500, and that would trigger this drug and alcohol policy. They would have to go get a drug screen, make sure they weren't altered.
Just for being idiots.
Yeah.
That would stop a lot of that.
Yep. And then DOT, this is where Kristen's input was really valuable. Took some time to add in some language to clarify whether or not we were DOT or not DOT, and we really hadn't considered that. And based on the state's definition, the fact that we're exempted from having CDLs, we're treating it as non-DOT, which actually allows you to test anybody for any accident. Again, we felt like that might have been a little bit overdue.
There's a provision in there that if you're going to test somebody for an accident that was not their fault, then you have to test everybody. So it's either you either do it or you don't. So if you do one and then you don't do any, then you violate the law with the non-DOT. You have to be careful. So we don't test for no fault.
Yeah, and the only reason we do is because we think it protects us, and more importantly, it protects our employees. So you see the list in the policy of the ones that we test regardless of fault. That's where that's coming from. That's from a position of protecting the employees. If this goes to court, want them to. We assume that they are all drug breach. You know, we assume that they would want to prove that if they were instituted. So that's kind of where we're coming from. It's not a punitive thing. We're certainly not trying to catch anybody. We don't believe anybody. I mean, this is a little different type of employment. Like, generally speaking, these are the top percent of the employees in any workforce. And we assume they're all drug-free to begin with, and we be able to provide them the evidence of that right after the accident so nobody can claim anything false.
Much of the marijuana.
Yeah. We're just treating it like any prescription drug. That was our legal advice. All right, and then the last one about the EMAC policy, deployment policy to provide guidance on how we assemble and deploy personnel if we are ever fortunate enough to be able to send a crew or an engine out on an EMAC deployment. And then the key part of this one is this allows us to convert deployed employees to a 40-hour pay schedule to align with other agencies. So some agencies have and some agencies have not put this in policy. That's all required. So you have an adopted policy that states that is your practice. Makes the billing side of it way, way easier, and makes it more financially lucrative for the personnel to get deployed. So I went to California on one for 2 weeks, and I was a captain and a paramedic that went with me. I was on shift work on a 56. He was a day worker paramedic, and he made about two-thirds more. So. And again, that doesn't impact the district because all of those costs, all of those salaries are 100% reimbursable.
So, on the drug and alcohol free workplace.
Yeah.
So, how many accidents did we have last 3 years that have required drug testing?
Germanos, you had to drive
it. Is if I understood correctly, any accident always drug tested under our current practice?
No. So before this wasn't clarified, and that's where we're
pick and choose,
getting frustrating, getting some frustration from the guys about, hey, why did this guy wreck this thing and he didn't get tested, but I wrecked this thing and I did.
Okay. I'm just trying to get a feel for, okay, yes, I know it's $400 per person per test, but how many tests would we, let's say everybody got tested for every incident. How many, what the number would have been?
If you just went off of this year, because I know that's really fast, that would be about six.
That's six that would have met this requirement.
Six that would have met this because of the damage. And so you're talking like every little thing backing up and hitting something, like, and there's no, like, barely any damage. Probably, I would guess, like 20 to 30 a year.
That's like equipment.
Every hand tool that was broken during training, every air pack that was damaged.
If we didn't have a dollar amount,
right.
Where are you getting your drug screen? They're only $43 at work.
That's good.
Well, there's always nothing on the weekend and after hours.
So holidays, they love to rent stuff on holidays.
Blue line. Yeah, we haven't had one yet that's been on, not on a weekend. Well, actually, yes, we have.
One,
two.
Yeah.
Jeremy. Yeah. Sure,
I do think we've been reducing our accidents, though. Like, the backing accidents have gone down quite a bit because we've been really pushing that. So, you know, like, as far as get damage between you, but that has gone down too.
Okay.
So this does also give us discretion to test based on reasonable suspicion or the events leading up to. So. We aren't bound by this in a way we wouldn't want to be. Like if somebody did something so ridiculously stupid that we thought they may be altered, regardless of the damage assessment, that's something we could still send them off to test them.
Sorry, it's my job. Once a month, I'm sending in somebody in for reasonable suspicion.
Yeah.
So if you have to do that, just make sure you're documenting with it.
Yep, and we tried to outline best we could what those requirements would be.
I still think that you are safer to have your policy dictate when drug tests are done rather than have Jeremiah make a decision based on damage. Because, I mean, $400 is $400. But then you've got some consistency. You're not discriminating against somebody who thinks that, well, why did they have to go and I, or why did I have to go and they didn't have to go? So we just cut our policy down the center that if it's a no fault accident, you don't have to get drug screened. So, but if you're at fault, no matter what it is, if you trip and fall on a chair in your office and it belongs to us, you're getting drug screened.
I think that's the safest thing to do, honestly. Okay. I mean, at this point, because to sit in the moment and try to hash out the value of damage, just take that, you take that away, that guessing away. And it's just, the only determination is fault or no fault. And that's an easier one, I think. Thank you.
So we're talking how many accidents last year? 30?
It's hard to, I mean, we don't really track all of them, but I mean, you're talking about, even at the no fault versus fault, you're talking about a huge difference.
So are these reportable accidents or just accidents?
Just accidents.
Because there is a difference. And
maybe
that's where
that.
You can define what is a reportable accident.
And even then, they will probably ask for dollar amount. So,
I mean,
because even a very common thing is scratches from trees down the side of the apparatus. Is that attestable?
To me, that's not reportable.
But then you get back to what's reportable, dollar amount.
You make impact in a vehicle that you are driving with a stationary object or a moving object.
Yeah.
A tree.
And that's already testable. So anything with a police report, anything, basically anything on the road, fault or no fault, we get a test.
Which right? I think is
so really what this avoids is just minor damage and then things that were damaged or broken in the course of the day that don't have a value worth, you know, going through this is kind of what we're trying to do.
When I worked at
what's the purpose of the test? I don't think the purpose of the test is the dollar it, the purpose of the test is to determine if somebody's impaired.
Yes. Right. Which changes the landscape of what you do and what you're responsible for. So when I worked at South Ogden, we had a $1,000 limit, whether it was no fault or fault. And we had public service or public parks and all of that, and they would go out and scratch something. So we got really good at defining what is a reportable accident. They're all reportable accidents, but how you treat this versus this, and if you can delineate the difference. Because there is a reportable at fault, and there's a non-reportable, you just don't report, but in a different way, there's a reportable at fault or non-reportable at fault as well. I think scratching the paint on a vehicle because you were driving up to a house and a tree got it, that crap happens, you know, stuff like that. But if you are driving along the road and you run into a parked car, there's a huge difference between those two.
I worry a little bit about the fault at fault being the only determining factor because the ladder truck getting bottomed out on something, which we never did get reported. That's the other issue is, are they going to report anything that's reportable? But had we known, I'm not sure that I think we would have had more subjectivity in a fault, no fault to say, well, you should have known better, but you didn't, and you did it where dollar amount is clean. Like dollar amount is, hey, it was an accident. That's what we call them accidents. You do it on surface.
Problem is this.
You get it.
Like, are we having like a lot of gremlins that work over this?
Yeah. We did, yeah. Yeah. So we had one person hit a garage door, they didn't get tested. We had another person get in an accident on the road, which wasn't their fault, and they did. And so there was some heartburn about why did they get tested and this guy didn't, and we didn't have a good answer. So that's what we're trying to do. You know, and maybe this isn't perfect, but this is way better than what we had 6 months ago. I'll tell you that.
Putting this in place, you think it's going to exponentially increase the amount of people that are then required to be drug tested?
I don't think so. I think this would capture the people that we should have been drug testing to start with. And in fact, it had this been in place 6 months ago, we wouldn't have heard the grumblings because it would have been clear.
And with
the garage door was clearly more than $2,500. He should have got tested. And that was our fault. Like, we missed it. It was on a Saturday on a weekend. And the guy didn't get tested. He should have. That's why I told the guy that was mad. Hey, you're not wrong. The guy probably should have. It doesn't mean you shouldn't. But he probably should have too. We missed it. And we'll figure it out and we'll get something on paper to find this. So this isn't ambiguous anymore.
With that person that was very upset, he also almost claimed the race card. So just so you have a, yeah. There was more grumblings even after the fact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it is important that we nail this down.
So it is important to us to nail it down in life, which you said.
Again, it's never going to be perfect. Guys will find reasons that this isn't great, but again, this is a big improvement over having nothing.
Chris, remember what Ogden had in place?
Everything. I was at a hospital inside, unloading a patient and another ambulance backed in and broke our little round mirror that cost $6. I had to be drug tested.
How'd that make you feel?
I went, this is
how'd that make you feel? So that's the other part of this.
Yeah, I went, what a total waste. I would have, if I'd have known that, I would have went down to the store and bought the mirror and put a new mirror on.
I did that once.
That's a limitation.
Yeah, Ogden was horrible about that. And then we had random drug testing all the time. And it was, they picked on people. I'm not going to lie, they picked on people. Especially people on the Monday morning when certain people like to go on certain activities. And
yeah, they got picked on.
But I will say, I don't think it's perfect. We're never going to write a perfect policy.
No, I like
it. It's an improvement. I would love to,
well,
to
work with it for a while.
You're right. We can come in again.
It's workable.
Yes, and we got lots of input. And Kristen and legal. This is about the sixth draft.
Do you have do you see a problem with that? I mean, we can argue about workability and stuff, but do you see a problem with what they're proposing from an HR perspective?
I still see a problem with it because, like I said earlier, your policy should dictate exactly when you're going to direct screen and when you're not. You shouldn't have an employee telling another employee when they're going to be drug tested based on perceived damage. What if the damage came back that it was less than $2,500? So if you have a policy that is black and white, there's no ambiguity, no gray area, you have a policy that says this is when you get drug tested, this, and this, rather than Jeremiah having to make that decision. And now he could be legally liable if he decides not to.
But if you scroll up one more slide, I think this one kind of specifies, I mean, if you're doing just scratches or minor dents or bumper, we're not. So that I think we're trying to eliminate the guessing.
And again, I do worry that fault, no fault is almost more gray, almost fuzzier for us to judgment call than a dollar amount, which if you guys will change it however you guys would like.
I think the fault, you know, did I do this? Yes, I did. I created a situation where I ran into something in one of the vehicles. That's my fault. Or somebody ran into me. Why should I have to get drug tested? That is a no fault accident. It's gonna maybe cost more, but I think if you create a culture and environment of people reporting things, even those non-reportable. Chris had a good point though. They're not being reported all the time because of fear of, like you said, who bottomed out the engine.
There's no sticks attached to reporting now, and they're not. So if they know they're going to get a drug test,
I think it just make it worse.
I think it gets buried. I think guys go to AutoZone, fix it themselves, and we never know. Maybe that's better. Maybe I don't want to know.
Yeah. At least it gets fixed.
Yeah, we don't see.
But that's why you this is a little check. One for me. Our drug check has been required by law for us to do.
Drug screenings?
Drug screening. No. Mm-hmm. I don't know what fire departments.
I don't know.
And do we feel like this has been put in place because we have a problem or we're worried about our employees with substance usage?
No, again, this is more advocating for the employee and protect our district. This is, it goes too far. Again, the easiest example is an on-the-road accident, which this was related to. Not their fault, but again, if somebody, and sometimes it's not even determined while they're on scene whether they're at fault. But if somebody could take them to court, want to be able to say, for sure, let's just rule this out. This is something that won't get talked about because here's the proof out of the gate.
So you're saying this on the road, but you're not saying like the garage door. Like we don't have to worry about anyone taking this to court about the garage door.
No.
So then drug testing in that case is just because you think they might have been on substance?
No, just the kind of a matter of process.
This is a CYA.
It's a CYA, and again, maybe
covered your
CYA.
It protects both parties. I
think it is important to establish that. But again, you know, for minor things, I think we run the risk of creating a culture where things get buried and don't get reported.
Well, and one thing I mentioned to you yesterday was that you've also got workers' comp. So I have had more incidents in this last year where workers' comp has called me and said, was there a drug screen done on this?
Mm-hmm.
And yes, there has been. And they've wanted them. I've in my entire career, I've never had them ask me that before. But they can be ineligible for workman's comp if they did not have a drug screen, or they were just asking you. They were asking me if they had it. But you don't know if it would make them ineligible. Like, you know why they were gathering that information? Because the incident was questionable. Very questionable.
Mm-hmm.
If you do have a workers' comp claim, that I mean, I had one several years ago,
mm-hmm.
where somebody broke their back.
Mm-hmm.
He was walking into the down some stairs and decided that she was going to try to hold onto a garbage can to get down the stairs because she couldn't walk, and she fell and broke her back. But come to find out, she had a broken ankle that she had surgery on, and she was on opioids. Never disclosed. If she could have, she would have disclosed that to us, which is what our policy says.
then we could have probably prevented that, helped her prevent that. But she fell and broke her back on the stairs, and she tested positive.
So it disqualified her.
It disqualified her from work, from work comp, because she was not fit for duty.
Well, I think at a minimum, I would not rely on. I would put what you put here in traffic accidents, that matrix. I would put that into the circumstances requiring testing. I do think that that probably, you know, the examples that are given probably give maybe a greater degree of objectivity. But you know what I'm saying? I would put that table into the drug policy. Assume we're all good with this.
And I think that, you know, there's a certain degree of normal everyday use for things, right? So we have, at my job, we have a lot of areas where they use a lot of things. Like we have our nutrition kitchen. Somebody could cause, you know, some significant damage to something, but it could just be something that's just normal use after time. So, you know, like scratching a tool or something like that is not
using something up.
Yeah, right. Using something up. It's in the normal context of your job, but the life is going to run out of this product at some point, and that's not your fault. Just because it broke when you were using it doesn't mean that you broke it. So,
yeah. You're making great points. So far, I've been swayed by Chris and Kristen and
Ken. It's not an easy one.
I
would challenge you to go find the perfect policy on it.
Yeah. How many of our trucks, I mean, most all of them now have backup cameras and stuff, just to eliminate backing hazards? And
no, but it's another policy. We did update that one probably 9 months ago that requires them to have a backer whenever they're backing anything.
Oh, good.
And that's reduced a lot of it.
A backer, yeah. Like a person?
Yes.
A missionary?
Yes.
Is that what missionaries do?
Yes.
I forgot that's where we got it. So even the medic unit, they have the guy had to get out and wave the other guy. Yeah, that's hard when you get guys that do stuff like this and you don't know what they're doing.
Had a guy.
Training.
He would give me the crazy of the arrow. I thought he was doing the hokey pokey. I didn't know which way I was supposed to do. I just stopped and be like, I don't know what you're saying.
I watched them back a couple times and I'm like, okay, this is ridiculous. So yeah, we taught them the right way to do it. Whether or not they do it depends on the day.
Okay,
so,
You're like, I've done my duty.
But that does seem to help. And then other things. So part of our accident investigation process is Jeremiah is in charge of getting an accident investigation. So he puts that onto the captains. They have to fill out a boilerplate form that has all that stuff on it, take some pictures, and then make recommendations on how it could be avoided in the future. And then we try to implement those. So after the garage door incident, Brian started working on fixing and installing lights that indicate whether the door is all the way up or not. So the backing, after we had a backing incident, we readdressed our backing policy and Tom went out and did some training. So we do try to eliminate these. I think we're doing about as good as anybody. It's kind of a thing. We don't love it. Tom can share some pictures of a tiller truck that just got wrecked in Salt Lake last week if you'd like.
Yeah.
How much is that going to cost? Backing.
It's probably over $100,000.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that would be just go internet sealer stuff.
Oh, well, yeah. Over $100,000. But that they're also using that as an excuse to replace the rusted subframe. Oh. So that's why it's driving the cost up. If it was, if there was just the accident, it's probably looking around $60,000.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you say that this has been reviewed by legal?
Yes.
Which legal?
Rachel.
Did Rachel review it, or did she have
Rachel?
Somebody at Fabian.
Rachel herself put it.
Well, and I just gave you my advice because I, as the HR director, I've had to deal with this multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I try to be Switzerland, but my job is to protect the company and the employees. And there have been there have been questions, and I have had people get in accidents that have been that have tested positive. And most of the time, you don't, but that one time that you do, then if they test positive, that liability falls off of you. It falls completely 100% on them if they cause an accident and they kill somebody. So to me, $400 is nothing to pay if you did find somebody positive.
So what change would you make? Would you recommend?
I would say that any at-fault accident would require.
And that goes back to Chris's point, though. That does seem a tiny bit harder to describe for me, too.
Mm-hmm. Like, and in the fire district, it's probably a, mm-hmm. in my job, it's yeah, not easier.
The two examples you gave were very crystal clear, but then when you're talking about things that are not on street accidents, that does get, again, harder to identify.
Mm-hmm. But if somebody's backing into one of your bay doors and they hit it, they're being careless. Why are they being careless? There's a myriad of reasons.
Yeah, and so we do still have the ability in that case to drug test them anyway.
But what you if but if you have an
these are just automatic terms.
Yeah, if you have an at fault accident drug screen, that's an at fault accident. You would drug screen them. You take that. They come back clean. You take that off the table. Now we can deal with another thing.
Mm-hmm. And but we do have that ability. And this was based on your input. Yeah. We did define at fault and no fault, mm-hmm. and we do give ourselves. The flexibility test any at fault. Why?
Yeah, based like on,
based on yeah, based on suspicion or the details of the incident. So,
in my mind from the HR world is that at fault and reasonable suspicion are two very different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, can something back up the reasonable suspicion?
Yeah, and that's where having. Fixed triggers, like a dollar amount, makes that even easier. It makes it less personal, takes all of the subjectivity from admin out in what would be 99% of our incidents that we would want to drug test. They would easily exceed the 2,500. It would be easy. We could say, this has nothing to do with what I think. This has nothing to do with who I think you are. It's just the trigger. It's the trigger. You hit the limit. We're going to test you. We would test everybody that does something that hits this threshold. Or I am afraid that, you know, us determining intent and fault gets messier, not cleaner. But I totally agree what you're saying.
If you would like me to research it more and then try and like redraft another policy and get with you, I'm happy to do that.
Well, I'm curious. You're the one that's making these determinations. Do you feel like this is what you need?
Respond. Childbirth.
Yeah. So it did help me
out.
This helped me out a ton.
Do you like that one?
The ones that we had since we went back in that dollar amount were very easy to tell yes or no. So much easier than trying to make a decision
on. North Road.
On the story, on like what they said happened, on what other people that were involved said happened, like that's where we were at before, and that sucked. That was terrible because, yeah, you feel like you're always making the wrong choice in there. I have nothing to back me up, essentially, the way we were doing it. Like, I had nothing to refer to. I was basically just making a decision based on my best judgment.
So do you feel that this revision of this policy gives you something to refer to and you can make a black and white decision?
I think so. I think like what you're saying, there might be like a couple of times where it might be hard to get the dollar amount, but like 99% of the time, like you're going to know like right away if it's over that amount or under. I would say that if we did it just... you know, no fault or fault. I mean, that would be substantial.
I wonder if you could say, and I don't want to make this too complicated, but maybe if the employee disputes the valuation that Jeremiah is putting on, that immediately there would be, and not necessarily an appeal, but you would present it to two other members of the administration, and then the majority would make the decision
if you believe that it exceeds $2,500 and requires testing.
That way it's not just on one person.
On one person, and and you know, they feel like, okay, you know, I think it's less, but if you three or a majority of you three think it, you know, I could be wrong, so I can live with that.
We have, but currently in our policy, we have like part of the accident review team kind of specifies who that could be, because that's, we meet as a group to go over the after action part and try and make sure that doesn't happen again. So that can very easily be those same two people. And that would be pretty natural.
Yeah, we could easily do that procedurally.
Just remember, you have between 2 to 8 hour period to have that testing done as well. So,
well, I mean, it would have to be fast. I mean,
that would need to be stated in
it's generally pretty clear.
Yeah,
like it's either expensive or not, or we never hear about it, really.
Or we hear about it well after the fact.
Right. But we definitely do.
I think if you did something like that, then that there's a way that if there is a because you're drawing a line somewhere, and people can argue with the line that you drew and whether they're across it or not. And so just having a real simple procedure that gives them a little bit of due process right in the moment, and away you go. I mean, I think then you're, like Kristen said, it's not putting it all on one guy to make that decision, because then it's him against
everybody else.
And
Jeremiah doesn't like me.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm okay.
I hear that every day. And then I realized it was me saying it.
I
mean, why? Okay. That's great.
I would support that if you, I like that idea.
Okay.
It adds just another
would
level.
Would you like that in the policy?
Great. I didn't have that in.
So with that amendment to the policy, you guys feel comfortable adopting the policy manual with this included to be modified?
Are you looking for a vote, or do you just want general direction?
I was going to
That's for a vote to
request
an action to approve.
Going to request action.
You can do it on that one policy.
No, that's okay. I mean, so does somebody want to make a motion to adopt this subject to the revision that we just discussed?
So moved.
Second. Okay. So we have a motion and second to adopt as with the modification. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Okay. Mind adopting the rest of the policy manual, and that's we have the other meeting that adopted the rest of the manual.
Somebody want to make a motion? Because we do have the full.
One question on the policy manual. Yeah. Do you have three different levels of staffing listed on that?
Yeah.
And you said ideal, you know, what we could run at. So what exactly are we voting on that? Just so that is going to be put into our.
Yeah, that's kind of our SOP, our standard operating procedure. Yeah. So this is the terminology we're going to use. These are the staffing levels that we are going to go between. And then the whole policy, which I'm happy to share, the whole policy, it's in the manual. I can take through all 700 pages, but it outlines exactly how, and then there's policies that tell us how to fill those positions.
Okay, I just didn't know if we were voting on, hey, like, this is the level we have to maintain, or like, it's going to be situational, and this is what we're putting in as our ideal, our bottom, and
And we always give ourselves an escape route.
Okay,
so
thanks.
At the discretion of the fire chief, or based on district needs or finances, like that's all.
That's my other question. Like, what if they don't have the budget for it? So.
Yeah, we don't tie our hands. Okay. I hate that.
Yeah, so you highlighted some policies that you maybe felt were more, not controversial, but just substantive.
Yeah.
From as far as what we would but you're asking us to adopt the
updates to the policy manual.
Yeah. Right.
Which again, nothing else in there is essentially you saw everything that needed legal. Everything else is small, minor changes. They changed systems. It messed a bunch of stuff up. We had to go back in and re-enter stuff. So nothing else is, I would say, consequential.
Okay. I mean, I did not review the whole policy.
I did not either. So I guess to the best of my knowledge, I would be willing to make a motion to adopt the policy changes to the manual.
But that being said, I did not read them all. I just, what was presented here tonight.
Sure.
The changes presented.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys can adopt whatever you want.
Yeah, or do we even need to? Or is it just literally a discussion?
It sort of just, you know, felt like best practices to make sure that we were modifying and acknowledging that we were modifying our policy manual as we went.
I've not read all of the policy adjustments. I would just rather have it be a discussion than make a modified action, personally. But I don't know, it's feel differently.
Well, I tend to agree. I think there's things that are within your purview as the chief executive officer of the district. And you've, in consultation with your team and in consultation with appropriate professionals, outside professionals, have felt like this is what the policy should be. We trust you, so if you say, yeah, that's what we need to do, then
So just clarification on my end, does the adoption of the drug ban policy then fall within that? So did we need to really make a motion?
No.
So this
this one did because it was modified after the pack. So that's why I was taking this one out in the action. Specifically, the traffic accidents policy is as written in the
description. But it is not, but it is also not an agenda item.
That's
policy.
I think we've given
you. So we're making a motion on something that's not an agenda item.
So I think we probably need to
bring it back next month. That's fine.
Well, I don't think you need to. That's okay. We've given you a lot of input about what we think you ought to consider. Yes, ultimately you can decide what you want to do, the benefit of our best thinking about it, and I'd say just go ahead and make the changes and we'll support you in those.
If anything, next month in your administrative report, just mention that it was done or read the wording.
Yeah.
No need to have a separate, but just let us know so that we're aware.
Yeah.
I totally agree with Tim's assessment. We trust you to that's what we've hired you to do. So.
Amen.
Okay, and I'll do a little more research to make sure we don't need to adopt the policy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And just make sure that we're covered.
Well, and let's be clear too. I think you should always feel comfortable bringing to us things that you want our input.
Oh, yeah.
So we don't want this to in any way be construed as, well, they don't want to be bothered with this.
True.
Not at all.
No, essentially, my rule is anything that I feel like needs legal review, you guys are going to see.
Wonderful.
Yeah, thanks
for coming.
We want to have your back, too.
Please not leave me.
I'm not bothered.
The democratic process in action made a motion. It is working. I just thought I'd go outside and talk.
Smoke break. All right, thank you, guys.
Welcome back.
So I'll make those changes.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you. Yep. All right, we'll move to item number 7, discussion and or action to approve fiscal year 2027, where to go? Employee benefits.
Okay, it's that time of year. So we need to get settled on what our benefits are going to be. We've started with some numbers in the budget, discussing that with the budget committee. But we need to decide and get word out about the open enrollment period. Worked with Buckner. We don't have Doug anymore. We have, Bryce?
Cameron.
Cam?
Bryce.
Cameron. And we're just about done training them the way we want them, aren't we, Nikki?
I'm hoping.
Doug set standards pretty high. So we did ask him to shop around. This is our current plan. It looks like cost increase of about 8.39%. Is that consistent for close going on? Less than last year, so that's the good news, but still doesn't feel great. We still plan to pay 90% of benefits, so the district cost increase would be 52 and some change.
So there is a cost share with the employees.
Yep, 90-10. Yep, so our total amount went up, $58,771 district cost increase is just the 52,840.
Is 90-10 for employee only, or does that include?
Family.
That's family.
Yeah, very generous.
Yeah.
All right, but we did ask him to shop that around, and PHP came in a little bit higher.
There's also the downside of switching. People now identify the doctors they like, even if they can stay with the plan. Their deductible year is not fiscal, it's calendar, so it doesn't disrupt anybody that had large out-of-pocket first 6 months of this year. That would reset with PHP in July. With it also being more expensive, we felt like that was an easy one to pull out.
But you also had a 7% save for next year.
Yes, so we got that.
PHP.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
So for the next year, we would get a discount, and it would be 7.3.
So it wouldn't be any lower. It wouldn't be any higher. They're guaranteeing 7.2. I thought it was 7.2. 7.3. They're guaranteeing.
Yeah. It's a guaranteed percentage for next year.
It's a guaranteed increase. Nice.
But it was lower than the 9.6.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love PEHP. I love the group and how you can share costs. No other plan out there does that. So we had last year a catastrophic year. Like we were, our claims were, so anything at 1.00, what we paid in is what they paid out, the wash. We were at 1.78.
Oh, wow.
I had five people with cancer, four of them passed away. So we had a catastrophic year. And they came in and we got an 8%. We were on Select Health, Blue Cross, anybody else, that would have.
What would happen? Would you, it would have significantly increased.
30% at least.
Something that we've done though, and to try to avoid that, is we put into effect the light scans or the health scans. So we hopefully have a better idea of the health. So for cancer, right? When is that?
Hopefully,
not for family members.
I mean, that is why we did that, right? So
no, because that would violate GINA. I mean, the genetic law. If we help them understand that they might be at risk, you can't use that information to make decisions on your plan. Because it's genetic
information. Oh, yeah, and we're not doing that.
And we're not doing that.
And these companies, they don't and won't provide us a discount based on that.
Oh, no, I'm not. I'm just saying for our own personal decision-making process that can be in our own heads.
In our own heads, yeah.
Yeah.
A good place for it to be.
The sovereignty of my own mind.
Well, that's probably also, better to, rather than referring to us, it's referring, the employees have access to information.
Yeah, of their own personal, now they do because of the additional benefits.
But if I'm correct, we're not given exactly everything.
Well, I think if I understand correctly, Meredith, you're saying that they did the life scan, they were given that information themselves, now they can make better decisions for...
Right.
Or you given their information to know if they have
to or
not. I'm asking. I wanted
to. I would love it if all that information was shared. Not.
I don't want it. I don't want or have a desire to look.
Yeah, back before GINA was put in place by the federal government, everybody said that. Yeah.
So personal health insurance. So we can't entertain PHP more. We can entertain PHP more if you'd like. It is an increase this year.
I would like you guys to.
And again, there is a pretty significant disruption to people's.
Out of pocket.
Out of pocket. And their
fiscal.
And their.
We're 6 months into ours right now. So we did look at that as well because we have a few that we are aware of that have hit that.
So that might take some messaging to make them feel good about. And if it was significantly cheaper, I think
it would be more attractive
to me, but we can do anything you guys want. But yeah, it is actually more expensive this year. I do like the fact that there's a guarantee for next year, but...
Then you wouldn't have any disruptions between networks and the Summit and the Advantage, because then you're covering both networks.
And yeah, just the deductible period and the max out of pocket.
The deductible period that we mainly looked at.
And do you have to do reporting to the IRS? Okay, because PEHP will do that for you.
Nikki's changing her mind.
I'm not changing my mind. I'm thinking fast.
All right, Blue Cross was significantly more expensive, an 18.5% increase over what we're currently paying. I didn't see any big benefits to them. And then United is wild.
50%.
So Holy dental is increasing for the first time in a while, but not much. That's like that's annually, so 4,000
annually. We got an 18% on
really?
Dental.
On dental. Yeah.
Which really upset me because they know exactly how many, like, it's not like health insurance where your out-of-pocket max and your co-insurance and all the stuff is here. They know how much they're paying.
Yeah.
So I think something is disrupting their company, and I don't know if they'll even be around next year.
Well, they can't raise our rates. They don't exist.
Delta Dental.
They have not raised our rate in 6 years.
I've never even seen an increase like this one on dental ever.
That's weird.
Ever.
Thumbs up.
Yeah, thumbs up.
Okay, and then our life that we started doing 2 years ago, this is district covered cost of $50,000 life.
Pretty good for this.
That went out $327 for the year. So nothing significant. Right. Moving the needle there. Voluntary life stayed the same. So our recommendations, but we're open to whatever you guys would like, would be to maintain our current plans through Select Health. About a $55,000 increase when you factor in our front loading, which we calculate to be around $1,785 for this year for the people that select the HSA. That's the amount of money we calculate that we save as a district if they choose the HSA over the traditional. So we're not making money on getting them to switch or pushing that money back out to those that choose to take the HSA, which feels correct. Delta Dental, 4,000 some change, principal financial up, total fiscal year increase of 59,435.
By the way, is there any reason that we have to offer traditional plans?
We don't.
So, and what's our, do we know what we're saving overall? If we go with an HSA plan versus a traditional plan,
we would save approximately that front load amount per year per employee if we didn't provide it to 1785. But that assumes that we're not front loading employees HSA. So we could realize that savings if we didn't provide that savings to the employees of front load, which is pretty common practice.
We don't front load. Give a per pay period. That way if they leave in August, they don't get the whole amount.
Yeah.
But we're on year two now of not having a traditional plan. So it depends on how your plan is designed, whether it's going to cost you or not.
Yeah, and I think our plan was to go there. In fact, I signaled that pretty hard to the guys for a couple of years that there's no guarantee that the traditional will exist. But the cost of the traditional actually went up less than the HSA. And with them liking to have the option, because we front load, it's costing us the same. I don't know that it's worth the morale problem to eliminate the traditional for no other reason than just we think it's a better option.
Well, and your max out of pocket on both plans is insane to me. Mm-hmm. So I know that you probably have chosen that to lower your premiums, but I wonder if your group would be happier to take more of a premium share and get less of a max out of pocket, because on your HSA it was $18,000.
Whoa.
I don't know who, I mean, on your HSA it was 4,000.
Wait, traditional was 4,000?
Now
the HSA.
What was 18?
Yeah, what was 18?
The max out of pocket.
Yeah, ours out of pocket went up.
Yeah, it went up.
The deductible for just the person went from 3,300 to 3,500. And then
IRS regulation, but $8,000 for, so if I were on the plan as a single, I would have to meet a $4,000 deductible. And then, I'm assuming that it doesn't say on here, your deductible is embedded in your out of pocket. So you're not paying $12,000, correct?
Correct.
Because some of those plans, the way that they do them, they're not embedded.
No.
So, okay. But on your traditional, I mean, on your HSA, your out of pocket for family is $16,000.
Mm-hmm. They just keep getting worse.
Well, that's why it didn't decrease as much. Which,
THP, what was the out of pocket for family on the HSA?
So again, so there's a change to reduce that.
So many different plans.
Right.
But on this one.
Okay, how much are we putting in their HSA?
1,700 and some change.
85,000. And how much can they carry over? Like, what is their?
There's no max. There's no max. What's great about it? Like, we try to coach.
Are we actually putting in 1,700?
Yeah, well, they can add yours.
They can just save that until they actually do.
Simply, there is a cap on it of how much per year.
And it's a ridiculous amount. Well, it's a big amount.
You max the
you can put it in a lot
there
of
There is a cap of
8,000.
So, I mean, here's the problem the plan that you're on now is that as a family, you can only put $8,500 in your HSA.
But you're going to be paying double for as a full family.
Yeah, employer and your yeah, contribution. Right. You're going to be paying double what you're allowed to put into your HSA to meet your max out of pocket if you have
a cash
target here. Yeah.
I'm a private like company owner, and like this sounds fantastic. I think the benefit plan sounds amazing. And $16,000 deductible, and you can have half of that saved up, and part of it contributed by the employer. I don't think any of it sounds crazy.
Well, especially when you consider a 90-10 share.
Oh, 100%. It means every month we pay $1,900 for it.
That's why.
It would also get worse if you straddled two deductibles. Also, like if you had a catastrophic, I had a daughter that went into the primaries in November and we stayed till February.
Shoot.
I hit two, so that would be $32,000 I'm liable for.
Yep.
And the most you could have
done was $8,700
per year.
Well,
per year of the employer, almost $10,000 with the lead.
But you can carry that over. So if you put in $8,500 one year, the next year you can put in $8,500.
Yeah.
The next year you can put in
$8,500. Well, the IRS goes up $100 or $50 every year with the allowing.
Yeah.
Well, it's actually great. Those tax and tax outs. Probably the only 100% tax and tax out tax shelter.
So they're taking advantage of it. They can have
things never used
saved
it.
For the
and
tax.
And you can also invest it as well.
Sure. It sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, I don't wish a catastrophic event on anyone, but I'm just saying I think it's reasonable what we're offering and actually generous.
And then we do all also at the open enrollment, we have the insurance representatives come in and offer supplemental for catastrophic. So if they choose to
like get an Aflac or a
accidental. Yeah. So if they choose to catastrophic, then but this would be the minimum that we can offer.
Well, I'm curious what the cost increase would be if there hadn't been a change in coverage. Do we know?
It'd probably be a lot.
What do you mean?
A change in
the max out of pocket.
I mean, so that's a coverage issue.
Do you know what it was last time, the max out of pocket? Like what, how much has changed?
17,000 and 15,000. So 17 for the.
It's
right next to it.
Just one.
Yeah.
So it just increased 1,000.
So it the traditional went up to 17,009, and the HSA went up to 16,000.
Yeah.
But you've also got a 30% co-insurance on your HSA plan, which. I don't know how you're meeting affordability on these plans, though, with the IRS, with the max out of pocket. That's how you're doing it, because that doesn't matter how much they're paying out of their check.
Exactly.
Right.
Which is almost nothing. Yeah, which is almost nothing.
Which that does play into our decision here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if we're not doing a 60-40, which a lot of companies do, a 90-10 is generous.
Yeah, it's very generous.
Obviously, they should have some accountability in managing their own money. And saying, hey, we might have some medical expenses. We should be saving for that. And if they need some training, let's put it in Tom's court. Tom, do you do budgeting?
financial advice. That's your portfolio.
I'll have Jeff.
As well, help you, let's help.
We did
ask. They get with the EAP, they also get film labor, a lawyer. There's lots of resources on our EAP for that. So, I mean, they could take advantage of that. I will say that it is, I don't know if this is for Kristen either, but half of our guys, they don't understand insurance. And I can talk to him from blue in the face. And I mean, I had a guy a month ago ask me what a deductible was. And I had to sit there and explain it to him. And he was like glossed over.
You have to draw pictures.
And I mean, I'm not joking. And
That's
I tried not to get frustrated, but you know, he wasn't happy, and it, you know, I did my best.
But like the joke of the guy showing up for his work 401k nervous because he's never run that far.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, they should be responsible, but most of them probably
yeah. Yeah, but we are responsible for
that. And some of their wives don't either.
Yeah.
I've learned that as well.
So what did you mean by if you go over to PPHP, their deductible, doesn't their deductible start over anyway on July 1st?
No, ours is we're on a calendar, so we get credit from January.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, so they would have to hit two reset.
With the lower cost in that information, I would say we stay with what we're currently doing.
Because we have one firefighter that has a child that has some special needs and they meet their deductible regardless within like 2 months, but then they just have a baby. And other people have already met it. And I, like, if we were going to do it, I would be saying in January, hey, we might be changing over to PHP. You need to be aware that that starts over in July. And if you've met your deductible, I'm so sorry, but this is what it is. Where, you know, it's just hard not knowing what the percentages are and the changes to know what direction we could go into. And prepare them for it just as much as every year we tell them, hey, we could be changing it to a flat HSA. And we've been doing that for the last 3 years. I think I just need to have a little bit more warning for some of them where they've already met it. And specifically one just this week just had surgery and he will meet his deductible on it because he's on the traditional. Turn around and say, oh, start over. Kind of. Is a whammy.
Well, again, our thoughts were if it was significantly cheaper, that it justified that, changing that, or that the benefit to the employee was so substantially better that it justified it, but it really didn't. It's a pretty comparable plan and it costs the district more. The future guaranteed rate,
nice.
We may kick ourselves potentially, but that would have made a difference, but that's working on now at this point.
So you're currently on a calendar year plan,
yeah,
fiscal year. So why go out for benefits now?
So we do the benefit change in July, but for some reason their out of pocket and deductible calendar is on the calendar, not
this. Can we change that in the future?
No.
So that we made a decision like this without having, like, I do feel like we're handcuffed a little bit too. I don't want to have any of those people have to repay a deductible or an out of pocket.
It's a budget issue.
Our budget.
Because we're fiscal.
Yeah. So it is not able to be compatible with.
You'd be making a benefits decision and a budget decision in December versus now because we are fiscal year.
Well, can we ballpark a figure and then just do open enrollment in November and not
year, you know. What? Sorry.
Can we do a ballpark figure for our budget for the year, but then do open enrollment for everybody? In October, November, I mean, that's kind of the traditional time where, I mean, like mine's always renewed that time of year. It gives you a thing, and then you start January.
Yours are always renewed in February, so I think it is adjustable. Like, I think we could tell the company we want to, anyway, I don't know.
We can look into it.
Has PEHP told you they don't have calendar year plans?
That's what the broker
told us. The broker told us it was a fiscal year. I can look at
which that. Seems a little crazy to me because it is public employees' health plan, right? I mean, they have lots of entities that are
such a state plan.
That PHP is
starting October,
so yeah. The one we're
on.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so we would be switching,
excuse me.
And if you were on a fiscal year plan, it would help you.
Yeah,
I prefer it.
I don't know any different than when I worked private, and it was in October. You had until December to get open enrollment. When I came here, I thought it was weird, but I understood it because it was fiscal, so it was a budgeting. How it was explained to me, it was a fully budgeting item.
And where I came from, we were Select Health, and it was just like this, but even with the same.
Yeah, I mean, your only advantage for being on a calendar year is your HSA tax amounts match up.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing else.
No, nothing else.
Okay. What do you need from us?
Tell us what you want.
Well,
that's the budget committee. So, again, would you make a motion for that?
I will make a motion. I would make a motion that we stay with the recommendations that have been presented tonight.
Okay.
Sure. Do you need more numbers on that?
No, no.
Can I ask one additional question?
Yeah. Before we well, ask? Actually, what this
during discussion. Okay.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. So, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
So, it's been a really long day. I've been at work since 6:30 this morning, so I just want to make sure I'm understanding this right. And I haven't had anything to eat today other than
you probably still understand this better.
Yeah, I feel like my brain is starting to fade. Your plan year starts January 1st.
Mm-hmm.
So how are they able to guarantee these rates? Because they're only guaranteed for 3 months.
I think our plan year, the way I understood it, starts July 1st.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, plan year. But the deductible and out-of-pocket calendar year is on a
calendar year.
That's why it does make sense.
It is.
But
it's almost like it's giving us a credit from the calendar year of the deductible in January. I'm so confused.
And again,
so I was right to feel confused. Okay.
Yeah. It's not just the one.
Try explaining it. Okay. Try explaining
it. And I don't know if they do that for tax, individual tax purposes. I don't know.
But that was going on record question. To say that it's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. So,
get that down again.
Please put it in next month.
I'm not quite as excited. In all the years I've been doing this for 20, 25 years, I have never heard that. So, you learn new things every day. So, okay, that's my
question. Okay, so is there any further discussion?
We're used to it. Sorry.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
I explain it to employees, right?
Yeah. Okay. Item number 8, discussion and or action, Q1 response data.
Well, since Kristen hasn't eaten anything all day, I'm going to take this more presentation down to like 5 minutes.
Can I chew on it?
All right. Yeah. I got gum. No worries.
So I gave everybody a copy. I think you'll have a copy, but we'll just go over just some brief kind of highlights and keep it high level unless you have any more questions. But you're welcome to take this home. If you come up with any questions, you can call me or text me or stop by, and I'm happy to try and answer them for you. But our whole idea with this, a lot of it is the accreditation thing that you've heard a lot about, but we also added a few things that we're trying to prep you as we move closer to becoming an applicant agency in the accreditation process. We just wanted to throw in some additional things for you guys to begin thinking about, which we're going to need your help with as we get closer, which is setting some benchmarks. And I'll kind of just go over that. But Q1 call volume, first quarter of this year compared to first quarter of last year, we had a pretty significant increase. We had all three categories, which were our fire-related calls, medical, and then transfers, all were an increase. A little bit of that increase is due to the paramedic unit, which we didn't have last year, Q1, but not anywhere close to that overall increase. So we're still a lot busier than we were last year. There's a little bit of information on 90th percentile and then the NFPA 1710, so you can just read over that on your own. And we've talked about that before. It's nothing new. Then there's a couple of graphics that I created just to help us hopefully visually understand. We throw a lot of numbers at you about different things, different benchmarks and different things that we measure. So hopefully the graphic will show you what that all means. So that you can see up on the screen or on your sheet in front of you, the triangle going at an upward angle. So you can see at the bottom, it says directly managed by the fire department. Those are the things that we can really control. That is us getting out the door as quick as we can, and then somewhat indirectly, but how our planning comes into place is where we put fire stations, and that reduces the travel time or increases the travel time. So you can see that
the benchmark for, or not, NFPA 1710's recommendation is 6 minutes and 39 seconds for the first unit to be on scene. So that kind of shows what all those times add up to be based on their recommendation. And then the chart below kind of shows where we're at in relation to those recommendations from NFPA 1710. So we have some things that we can do better. We can definitely work on, and we've seen the response times, which is the time where from the time we get the alarm to the time we roll out the door, we've seen those come down some, and we're going to continue to work on that. That's the main thing as of right now that we can control. Station 23 would be the other thing in the future that will help us reduce some of those travel times. And then also, if you remember up in 25's planning zone up by the divide, when Mountain Road gets put through, that will help Station 22, their travel time become a lot quicker to some of those areas. The next one is just the same thing, but for the medical call. So same idea. And then the graph below shows how we're doing on the medical related calls. And so you can kind of look over that as well. The main thing that I wanted to focus on is the what we've been able to do by getting with dispatch and creating these planning zones and having those input into the FireCAD system so that we can organize that data. So it's still fairly new, but this year will be the first full complete year that we'll have all of that information, and you'll be able to see how each planning zone is doing and the times. Specifically, the three graphs are the medical ones. So it's travel time, where we're currently measuring up against FP 1710, and then our dispatch scene to arrival, which the time that gets us from the time we have an alarm to the time we roll out the door, then the travel time on top of that is that next one. And then the final one is the total response time, which is everything from start to finish. As soon as somebody calls 911 to the time that we get on scene. And you can see the red numbers on each of those columns is where we're struggling to meet the NFPA 1710 recommendations. And it shows you kind of the compounding problem as we go through each of these different benchmarks or the measurements for the benchmarks, that the times add up super quick, and it's really eye-opening to see all those calls and the times add up so quick, and the total response time is just a really good indication, because we talk a lot about 4 minute travel time, you guys, but total response time is everything, and that's just really eye-opening. So if you have a chance, go over some of that information. And then the rest is just maps, just visually laid out the information.
And this is quarter one.
Quarter one, yep. So any questions on any of that? So where we're going to need your help is when we get further in the process, we're going to need help creating our benchmarks. NFPA 1710 is a recommendation, but we want to put the information in front of you where we historically have been and where we want to be and where you want to be as a board. And so that's where we're going to need your help, is in determining that. So,
and obviously we've been gathering the data very diligently. Do we have any historical data? Are we able to determine how much we've improved maybe since 5 years ago? Do we have any data from 5 years ago, just as an example?
I can, I started doing the data reports like a year ago, but I have built reports in the CAD system, so I can go back and pull as long as the CAD system has been, which I think is, 10 or 12 years probably.
And our accreditation wants you to have 3 complete years, and so mm-hmm. that'll be a minimum of 3 year data. But
right, go back. I'm just curious, where are we right now in relation to where we were?
Maybe before Station 22 or something.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, that'd be good.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I can work on that. Any other questions? Is that quick enough, Kristen?
That was really quick.
Good job.
Thank you. Nice job, man. This looks, I like this.
Yeah, I love these maps.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that home is steady.
Yeah, that's great. Those ones going over into the valley, are those the paramedics going over there?
No, not all of them. A lot of them are brush truck.
Oh, okay.
And our ambulance. And recently they tried to call our ladder truck over the bike, but we stopped them.
Hey, do we? Do we know from Davis County, or not Davis, but Fox Hill County?
Yeah, every once in a while.
Very rare.
Yeah.
Okay. Very rare. I didn't know if we were with the new dispatch and everything, if there someone from, I was talking to someone from Brigham City and said that they said Northview's our second lead.
Yeah.
They quit calling Willard and everybody. I'm like, yeah. Oh my no, God.
There's a lot of politics there that I tell you.
Oh, cool. My Hammond. Yeah. I mean, we
had lunch with their chief.
Yeah. I golfed with one of their captains and I'm like, what?
Okay. The funny thing about that, they are super excited to have us come up there.
They were.
Like everyone, I've got several friends at Brigham City and they're just like over the moon. They're like, we're so excited to have you guys come. So,
they did a Rudy for Tom. They lifted him up on his shoulders.
Not quite that much, but
how many guys were there?
7, 8, 12. This story.
Okay, let's go to item number 9: discussion and our action to approve dates for one-on-ones.
Yep. Our tentative for is in May. Well, it's in June. What are we calling our May one?
Our May meeting.
Mm-hmm. Is it the tentative?
Just calling it our
maybe. Okay. So we're meeting with the budget committee the first part of May, and then probably one more time. Our May meeting is on the 28th. So I was looking at the week of the 18th through the 22nd. Are you all three of you available during that week? And what days would be best?
Do we need to do this in here?
Could do it afterwards.
We just wanted to do it over text. We just wanted to get
it. No, let's
okay.
Put you down there. Yeah. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I can do anything. Okay.
Administration reports, agenda item number 10.
Okay, she, for the sake of her grumbling stomach. It's me. Thank you again, Jeremiah. This is so good. So I love this. And again, we wanted to get you guys thinking in 90th percentile. That's what's going to be required for our accreditation process. And as you start to look at these, he said this, so I just want to emphasize it again. We, for our benchmarking, we will decide what our standards are, right? So 1710 is just one measure. We don't live and die by it. We're not bound to it. It's just a recommendation. So as you watch these, yep. So accreditation, what they want you to do is analyze your data, understand it, and then set your own benchmarks for your own community. So you just look at talking to your neighbors and the people you represent about how long they expect. And again, our fear, because we talk travel time so much, is that you may even start to get the idea that it takes 4 minutes to get somebody to your house when you have an emergency. So I think the important numbers are these total response time. PSAP is from when the phone picks up. So this is phone pickup to park break, right? That's how long it actually takes to get the first unit to your emergency. So getting an idea like sort of what the community's expectation is for that. How long should it take? And it was 10 minutes. That's enough. I don't know. We'll decide. And we'll do that probably in the fall. Be able to nail down like 3/4 of data of the planning zones, historic stuff for 3 years, and say, okay, what would you like our standard to be? So thanks again. Awesome. Speaking of getting busier.
I have a question on that.
Yeah.
That's this whole thing. Do you feel comfortable with the dispatch time? I mean, there's nothing we can do about it, right?
Yeah, so we do talk to them.
They've improved.
They have improved, and
they've gotten a lot better.
Feel pretty strong with it. We need to make sure we've cleaned our own room before we go out and start criticizing.
Good relationship.
Yes, for sure. And that's they work with Jeremiah all the time.
Standards to call their meeting, and that they're trying to improve their system all the time.
They still just all in the main station.
Yes. And then they've added.
Okay.
No, they've added. Bringing students. Yes. So it's kind of crazy to hear.
What is that number?
Yeah.
Sort of in the same vein, we've talked a little bit about our paramedics adding a significant amount of call volume. On top of that, they are using a significant amount of supplies with that. So figured out it's costing. All right, so our medical supply budget guide did some numbers for it because we are tracking in that line item pretty high. And we sort of just took a guess last year on how much to increase medical supplies because we didn't know. It looks like it's probably going to be higher than we anticipated. Good news is we're getting compensated for that. It's coming in at a different line item as revenue and not going out as paramedic boards, but it's reflecting in that medical supply line item is going to probably be overspent by maybe $15,000. I just want to make you guys aware of that. Make sure we have permission to continue placing medical supply orders over $5,000, even though we've exceeded 100% of that line item based on our new policy.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So we'll keep doing that. But he put together some really, really interesting numbers. It looks like total cost, and we just did full arrest. We thought, what's probably the most impactful budget-wise? And one cardiac arrest costs a total of $601 for one cardiac arrest. That's dumping the box, which is what we normally do, right? We throw the box at them, all the medications, we do sticks around the epi, we do everything we can. So every full arrest, regardless of the outcome, costs us around $600. Before that was probably, it was probably coming out of the,
save your life.
Probably coming out of the Ogden and the Weber Medics boxes, those medications. Now it's coming out of our own.
Okay.
Total cardiac arrests in 24 and 25 was 44. Total arrests in 25, 26 was 61. Okay. So assuming we worked every single one of those, you're looking at a total cost of last year around $100,000 just in medical supplies just for points.
You know the survival. Anyway. You know the survival rate of that.
Less than 10%.
Survival rate less than 10%.
And Weber County has one of the highest success rates in the country.
Really? 10%.
It's less than 10%.
Less than 10.
Yeah. Even in the perfect world, in the ER, is less than 10%. So again, one of the don't do it.
Now that's not just
Jack. Go ahead and say
don't have a chat.
That's so much hard to
stay away from the light.
Yeah, you're at the light on that one. All right, so I wanted to highlight again that we are getting busier, and then make you all aware. Don't be surprised if that line item exceeds what we budgeted, and we are in the draft budget, including that $15,000 extra that we think will probably cover us. Next year, if call volume doesn't continue to increase 200 calls per quarter, which is pretty wild. Mm-hmm. All right. And then budget committee meeting. We had our first meeting. It went awesome. We are still working on those fund policies that we talked about. And I have a working draft that we're working with them. We'll discuss those with you guys in your one-on-ones, but I'm happy to share an advanced copy with any of you that want to see it before that. That's all I got. Sure. Round two. Thank you.
I don't have anything.
Tim just asked about getting alerts on their phones. We do have, so the other option besides iSpy is we do use Flow MSP, which I think you're familiar with, right? Chris South Ogden uses it.
It went back to iSpy.
So it gives you basic, the first like two lines of a dispatch of what it is and nothing else. So you get to see where the trucks are
going. What about Pulse Point?
Yeah, Pulse Point, the same.
Ogden.
I don't know.
Did Pulse Point?
Mine kind of timed out for some reason, so Pulse Point doesn't work. I don't look at it anymore. But that'd be another option. So,
I don't.
But if you'd want, we can. It's up to you guys what you want. We brought it to you that we should pull it away, but if the board wants it, I can give you an email and you can get it.
Pulse Point's free and I use it all the time.
Yeah.
But that's for the whole county. It's not just for our good.
But it'll tell you, it shows what units are responding, and it was pretty easy. 821,
E21. Yeah, again, if you guys would like to have my time back, you guys are awesome. We'll give it to you. We might just give you some annual HIPAA training.
You can
do it. But that was enough.
Did they change that?
Did they make it? Bit better because I know
maybe it's so that you can't see the other
agency. Yeah, we can't see unless our agency units are on the call. I can't even see the details in the rest of the county. So I don't know what Ogden's doing.
They went to Pulse Point.
Because
there was too much information there, and people were the other agencies were.
Well, it was a big clinical
problem. It was like a knee jerk thing for one freaking call. And everybody reacted.
But it's pretty serious. Yeah. But so we can, we can help you with whatever options you want.
Yeah. But I'm sorry, you mentioned that before and just skipped my mind. We'll get that figured out for you.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Common.
Okay. Let's see.
Oh, sorry. I do have one thing.
Nope. Yeah. You already passed.
Yeah. One good thing, and it's that Ogden Regional came in and recognized our crews for a really awesome trauma that was full arrest. That was an 8-year-old little boy. I don't even think he was 8. Yes. He was 6. And he got ran over, and our crew saved him. He has no deficits. He came and presented the award to our crew, and we're waiting for Ogden Regional to post it. They got to get permission from family and all that stuff so that we don't violate his privacy stuff. But once that gets done, we're definitely going to brag about that. But
that's also going to be our Medical Call of the Year award at Saturday's banquet, and I think we just got confirmation that he's going to come.
Look at some pictures or take a video.
We're very traumatic, though. He was wrapped up underneath the car, into a ball, not breathing. Used the extrication equipment to jack the car off of him, pulled him out. And Diego, who was a relatively new medic, worked him start to finish to the hospital and saved him.
Well, I think, didn't they say 6 minutes from time on scene to time and route to the hospital?
Yeah. So and he was full arrest when they pulled him out.
Right. And wrapped underneath and him back.
That's a great story.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, it was worth a long board meeting just for that.
Yeah. Come Saturday, you'll get to meet him. Cute.
Him and his mom are coming.
Cool.
Yeah. He has some gnarly scars on his head, but, you know, chick stick scars. So,
yeah, he's right. He's alive.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Chick stick scars. Scars bring
Okay. I don't have anything. Nope, Chris.
Nope.
Okay. Next meeting is when?
May 28th.
May 28th. The motion to adjourn.
Oh.
Second. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed?
Okay. You will look out on
that. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah, I went to town on Sunday. I'll enjoy it.
I did get that.